United States submarine base at Key West, Florida. A dispatch that quoted President Truman's press secretary, Charles Ross, as saying that President Truman has no knowledge of any secret project by this government that would give substance to the existence of such objects. Ross also said that both the Air Force and the Navy deny that such objects exist.
Yes. You don't wait until I can confirm or deny, and that is offensive.
Yes.
No, as I was saying yes, you hit record.
Well.
So.
Well. Anyway.
But to finish answering.
What?
To finish answering. Yes, I am ready to start recording now. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hey, what's up? My name is Noelle, and I'm going to hit you with a little tweet I saw the other day, which is, I resonate with it on a spiritual level. It's from at Taptastical or El Tapatio. Mm-hmm. Hello, sharks. I'm asking for $48 so I can do a hostile takeover of a dive bar's touch tunes. And that would be me playing Creed for 45 minutes straight.
Oh, yeah. That's just gospel. You're just trying to spread the gospel.
Yes.
And I'm Chelsea. I just ripped my pants.
Oh.
Wait, look at that.
Oh, my fucking God. You ripped it like the 80s Hulk.
Yeah. Like the back. My calf. I flexed
my calf
and they exploded. I don't know. Did you see me shuffling at the top of the episode? It was me realizing I just ripped the hell out of my pants. So.
Well. Rest in peace those pants, dude. That looks
crazy.
Nah,
I'll sew them up.
Okay. Or
I don't want to let this pair go. They're like, you know, when you get a good solid pair of pants, like pajama pants. I'll just turn them into shorts, maybe. No, I'll turn them into floods. This is riveting content. I'll turn them into floods, which is what we used to call crops back in my day.
Capris.
Yeah, capris. That's it. We used to call them floods.
Yeah, speaking of riveting content and capris, I saw some fucking, and I'm going to say it with my chest, dumb bitches. I saw some dumb bitches on TikTok trying to like pretend like capris are going to be the next in-girl trend. And I'm like, this is how I know you guys are fucking psyops, dude. This is how I know you're fucking psyops, because they put these like hot little twinks and these like cutie little fashion girlies to get on Beyonce's internet and lie and say, the trend for this summer is going to be capris. You're lying. You're lying. You're
lies
a government psyop, and you're here to spread disinformation and lies to make us all ugly so you can stay hot. Go fuck yourself. So anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, those are influencers saying what looks best on me and how can I make this more obtainable for me in my local store. I refuse
to
comply.
They're trying to make all of us ugly. So they're like, yeah, girly pops, wear crops, wear capris. Wear capris. They're so cute, girl. You should wear capris. And then meanwhile, they're out in like the Skims bodycon dress, flipping you off because you look like a fucking asshole.
They're saying that it's a costume party, but it's not actually a costume party. And then you show up in a costume that your mom made out of curtains for you so you wouldn't be left out, and then you ended up being left out.
Yep. I fucking see you. I see through you, bitches. So anyway, speaking of seeing through you, bitches, what are we doing today?
We're going on a journey today. A little bit of man, we've been on a religious kick lately, but
we took a break and we're back.
Yeah. But we're gonna go on a journey. One that begins with an overdue nod to a topic that has been eagerly awaited by a friend of the podcast. And let us right here, right now, make a special dedication to a furry friend named Mochi. Mochi's dad has been requesting this episode for, dare I say, years now.
Yeah.
And it's really a tale of oversight on our part. For now, we are making amends, probably not well, but we are dedicating this very episode to Mochi.
I will say that Mochi's dad, after 2.5 years of getting zero responses from Chelsea, privately DM'd me on Discord and was like, hey, just a thought. I've been asking Chelsea to do this for years. And I think I honestly only did like 0.5 of the steps too. I said, you're so right. I'm going to bug her about this. I screenshot his message to go send it to you. And then God yeah. knows what happened to that screenshot because it never left the photo album.
It's funny because Mochi's dad is a friend that I actually talk to on a regular basis too. So it's like our conversations will be just catching up with the interlude of, hey, will you cover this topic? And I'm like, yeah, man. And then we go into the rest of our topic.
Yeah.
So,
my here bad. You go. Also, pause. So sorry, as we derail the thing you wanted once again, Mochi's dad. Whatever is behind you, hold on, put your head back. I'm going to screenshot it. There's a reflection in your window that looks like a UFO is hovering. Hold on, don't. That's crazy. What is that?
Do you see it? Send me the screenshot. I'm looking out the window right now and I just see a beautiful sunset.
Yeah, it might be like a part of the sunset. It might be a cloud, but from here, it looks like a classic UFO.
Maybe it could be. You know, the other day I was coming home and there was a light on the mountain, not floating near the mountain, but a light on the mountain. You've seen the mountain behind my house. People don't hang out there. And yeah. it just chilled for a minute. And I was like,
they're coming to get you, Barbara. I just sent it to you. Do you see? I put an arrow.
It's a super cloud. Let me send you a picture from my point of view. Again, riveting content.
It looks like this is going to be the cover of the episode. It does. With my arrow pointing to the UFO in the window, which is just the crop of the cloud that I see looks like
and a me UFO. And trying to lean out of frame, yet despite being fully in fucking frame.
I thought you were doing that face on purpose to do a shock face.
That's just how my face is.
All I'm saying is the picture I just took of you with that fucking red arrow pointing to it.
I've never looked better.
No, that would be the image that gets your ass on YouTube and you would pull it up and show me and be like, look at this definitive clickbait. That's most clickbait shit. Anyway.
The clickbait, yeah.
Anyway, okay. Unpause. Back into this.
No. Yeah. Okay.
Here we go.
So, real talk though, Mochi, you're a real one. So let's dive into a chapter of early Christianity called Gnosticism, which offers a twist on the traditional story of Christianity that we have all heard time and time again. But instead, let's head back to a time when Christianity was still finding its feet. No set rules, no official church buildings, and certainly no uniform belief system. Because this is where we get the backdrop for the rise of Gnosticism, which is a spiritual adventure that paints the material world as the handiwork of a not-so-benevolent being. And enter Christ, who was not served just as a savior, but also as a guide to escaping the world's clutches through a profound inner journey towards enlightenment, or gnosis.
Is this not like what the Buddha is trying to do?
It's very Buddha-sounding.
Okay.
But this, I think, is a little bit more punk rock than Buddhism, perhaps.
Okay.
So this isn't going through the motion, this gnosis isn't going through the motions of religion, like attending church, following the clergy, or even being a good person per se. It's more about a personal, mystical union with the divine, a kind of spiritual experience that's deeply, deeply personal. And by the latter half of the second century, Gnosticism was making waves across the Roman Empire. Christianity at this time was anything but monolithic. It was diverse, dynamic, and without the structures that we associate with it today. There was no creed upon Bible, no universal creeds, and no settled hierarchy of bishops overseeing a flock.
Well, we could argue that's because it hadn't taken root yet, right? It was still whisper networks to be Christian, because you would have been prosecuted if you came out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where you get the fish symbols on the back of cars and everything.
Exactly. They would do their little secret handshakes in the sand, drawing fishes to see if you were Christian.
Yeah.
And it was still pure. It hadn't been bastardized by greed and capitalism. Yeah.
And according to Karen L. King, a historian of religion at Harvard, this era was marked by a whirlwind of ideas and practices, all jostling for position in the Christian cosmos. In this wild spiritual landscape, Gnosticism was just one of the many interpretations of Christianity, and it brought to the table a unique vision that was as legitimate as any.
I will say, before you say my name and get on with this paragraph, this era of Christianity reminds me and solidifies my belief in that you will always run into problems and controversy when you turn your hobbies and passions into careers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like back when Christianity was just about good vibes and secret handshakes, and they weren't trying to demolish entire cities and peoples and burn down their, you know, structures to build up their own. Before they were doing that, they were just being cool and having fun, playing acoustic guitars on the side of the road and having philosophical debates. And then they were like, oh, we've got to make this legit now. Let's like build a building and hire people and wear little outfits. And then it got really fucky and evil.
Yeah, hold on to that thought for sure, because there is a conspiracy reason as to why some of this stuff happened.
And ooh, it would be
very interesting to talk about.
You talk about it. You're going to bring it up later?
Yeah, but hold on to that thought, though, as to why some of this stuff happened.
Okay.
Because there's some reasons, but I'd be interested to know if you have any other insight as to why you think some of this stuff got swept under the rug. Now, Noelle.
Yes.
Something you've brought up before is the idea of a religious PR campaign for the Old Testament God.
Mm-hmm, very much and so.
Interestingly enough, this is actually a pretty significant belief in Gnosticism. What if you're
Gnostic? They agree with me that like the Old Testament God needed to get a PR campaign, and that's why we have the New Testament. And that's why we have Jesus.
Kind of. They are two very different beings, essentially. You have the villain,
yes.
And you have the hero.
Yes. They believe that?
Yes. Let's see what
do it. Oh, God. They're so right.
Gnostics had a whole different take on the world and spirituality. They looked at the material world and said, this place, clearly created by an evil being.
Yes. This is what I say. Yes.
Christ, Mr. Jesus, he came down not just to hang out, but to share an ultimate escape plan. Revealing the secret to breaking free from this bullshit is through something called gnosis.
He said this?
This is what Jesus does. Yeah. Jesus comes down and is like, this place fucking sucks.
Yes.
Let me tell you how to get out of here.
But he says this and it's written in the Bible, the New Testament, the things to do.
No. Well, yeah, if you follow Jesus's teachings, you go to heaven. But
that's not what we're talking about here.
No. Jesus is saying, this place is bullshit.
Yeah.
And I can help you get out of here.
Uh-huh. Where's that written down?
It's not. We'll get into it.
Okay.
It's not in our Bible.
Okay.
It's not in our Bible. Whoa, you asking questions, girl. I like it. So this wasn't just about going through the religious motions. It was more about sparking an internal revolution, awakening to a hidden divine essence within. And most of what we've pieced together about Gnosticism comes up from two main sources. First, we have the heresiologists. And these folks were the ancient critics of heresy, essentially the early reviewers who didn't exactly give Gnosticism rave reviews. They belonged to the branches of Christianity that eventually laid down what Christianity meant, shaping what would become Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, and Protestant traditions. Writers like Irenaeus of Lyons and Tertullian aim to challenge and dismiss Gnosticism. This is where the PR campaign comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And while they might not be the most unbiased sources, sifting through their critiques still gives some pretty crucial insight into what the Gnostics believed. Because here we get to the original hits themselves, the Gnostic texts. These are what we would refer to as sometimes banned books of the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
And despite many being lost to time, a good chunk survived and were rediscovered, offering us a direct line to the Gnostic thought. Because back in the 2nd and 3rd centuries, the Christian scriptural landscape was kind of like the Wild West. There was no established, quote, New Testament. And what we thought was sacred text really varied wildly amongst groups. The Gnostics had their own set of cherished texts, and just like everyone else did at the time. And a good chunk of these Gnostic texts were rediscovered in Egypt in 1945. And this discovery, later referred to as the Nag Hammadi Library, was a remarkable find that has thrown a spotlight on the diversity of early Christian and Gnostic beliefs. Discovered near Nag Hammadi, an upper Egyptian town in 1945, this collection was unearthed in quite a dramatic fashion. And this really could be its own fucking story because a local farmer named Muhammad al-Saman stumbled upon 13 leather-bound papyrus books hidden inside a sealed jar while he was out in the fields looking for more suitable soil to farm in. And while he didn't find any good dirt, he did dig up a certain set of codices, which contained 52 texts, along with pieces of the Corpus Hermeticum and other versions of Plato's Republic.
Oh my God, I would be so worried I was about to get a fucking laser on my forehead, if you know what I mean.
James Robinson, in his introduction to the Nag Hammadi Library in English, suggests that these texts may have been connected to a nearby Panchomian monastery, and they likely ended up buried as a direct reaction to St. Athanasius's edict against I tried to write everything out phonetically in this episode, and I apparently missed one. edict against non-canonical texts in 367 AD. Non-canonical would essentially be non-biblical.
I was going to say, what does that mean in relation to religion? Because I would say that's non-canon.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly
not it. Not canon, but I don't know what that means in relation to...
It's like how we say the Book of Enoch is a banned Bible book that we've talked about before where it talks about...
Enoch.
It could be Enoch. But you get like Enochian texts.
Yeah.
Things that we hear about. And that even hits in pop culture a lot when you see those cool swirls and things. Mm-hmm. That's like angel script. That's all comes from that. But that would be non-canonical.
They're saying it's not canon.
Exactly.
So they're saying that like Old Testament and New Testament is canon in the lore of God and Jesus, but there are not canon fan fictions off of that. Like Mormonism.
Yes, exactly. And they led a massive PR campaign against it to the point where we still see it today, or even we saw it, like look at fucking Galileo. When he mentioned that something was non-canon at the time, that sun rotated around the earth and they were going to kill him for it.
Yeah.
So it was a very religious war against keeping anything that wasn't set in the Bible at that time out of the fucking Bible.
And always my favorite piece of historical lore when people forget that most of the atrocities in humanity's history have been started because of religion.
Yeah. Also, the fun part is when you start to get into books about like Lilith and things like that that aren't necessarily mentioned in the Bible, but they're mentioned in these non-canonical texts, or the fact that Noah was probably an albino, that you get the giants and how he was probably like a descendant of the fucking giants. Like all that shit comes from the non-canonical biblical stuff, which would have been so fucking cool if it all would have been included.
Yeah, it's like a little interesting how they pick and choose what fantasy stories to include in the canon text and non-canon text, because
very interesting, and I can't wait to tell you the reason why.
Okay, great. Okay, keep going then.
Anyway, the discovery of these texts gets even more interesting because Jean Dorese, taking the lead in scholarly inquiries from 1947 to 1950, learned that these manuscripts were found in a graveyard dating back to Egypt's 6th dynasty. And later in the 1970s, James Robinson managed to track down al-Saman, this is the guy who originally found them while looking for dirt to farm, who shared a tale straight out of a movie. There was a family feud, tales of cannibalism, and a quest for fertile soil that led to the discovery, and that fears of jinns haunted the unearthed treasures.
Whoa.
And to add to the drama, al-Saman mentioned that his mother, spooked by the manuscripts, actually burned some of them. And Robinson believes that these lost pieces belong to the Codex 12. So this is where we could probably do a full episode on that. But the codices and things, like, we get like the satanic codex where it has like all of the rules of like hell and shit. This was like the biblical codex where it has all this cool badass biblical lore where we get the cool conspiracy theories of the Bible, and some of them are like gone forever. And the only reason we know about some of them is because we pull back old critiques of them where people talk about why they don't think they're true. And that's only how we know some of them. But the fact that we saw them being referenced and then fucking found in the 40s, So cool. Like, they were referenced in 2nd century AD, and then we find them in the fucking 40s.
Also, just what a bummer that... Leave it to a superstitious girly pop to fucking ruin it for everyone.
To your mom? Yeah. To your mom to burn your homework? Yeah.
Literally.
And this discovery not only expanded our understanding of early religious practices, but also brought to light the complexities and mysteries surrounding the preservation and loss of ancient knowledge.
Yep. Bitches love art in libraries, yeah, dude.
I mean, I know now in my adult life that you can't burn anything that is cursed. I don't know if I would have known that in my youth.
You know, well, neither did she.
She should have. She was older than me at the time. If you're old enough to have children, you should be old enough to know how to handle cursed objects.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually what they should start typing in the like soon to be mommy blogs.
Absolutely. What to expect when you're expecting. It's just an upside down cross on the cover.
Yeah, it's what to expect when you're expecting the Antichrist is the full.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they cut out of the title.
Uh-huh.
It's like
the new Omen's coming out too.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You should include that in there. Put it in the mommy and me groups.
Yeah, you have to. You honestly should hire your second choice of nanny first, because she's going to be the one who throws herself off of a building in honor of the sacrificial lamb of Satan.
You have to do one complete exorcism before you give birth, or the state can take your baby.
Yeah, and literally the state. And by the state, we obviously mean the Illuminati. So
I was going to say the Catholic Church, but
that the same hat.
So navigating through Gnostic texts can be tricky, and I had a very hard time doing it because it's hard to pin down exactly how many we have seen since deciding what's Gnostic and what isn't. It's kind of not very clear. And we've also have dozens of these texts that were mostly penned in Greek during the 2nd and 3rd centuries. So this means that they are slightly younger than the New Testament, and they're believed to draw from even older sources. So new books, older content.
Got it.
But among some of these treasures that people do agree upon as being actual Gnostic texts is the Secret Book of John, which offers a twist on creation that could either complement or challenge the Gospel of John. Now, when we talk about the Secret Book of John, we are talking about the main all caps when we talk about Gnostic beliefs. Because this text isn't just another book. It is a key to understanding a whole different side of Christian thought. Again, Karen L. King, our Harvard professor, calls it the first Christian writing to formulate a comprehensive narrative on the nature of God, the origin of the world, and human salvation.
So I know that we're probably going to get into talking about how like God's evil, which is my favorite, but I just want to say that the Secret Book of John, the moment you said that, my brain went, the Secret Life of Dogs. Like, my brain immediately sent that out. It was like, oh yes, the Secret Life of Dogs. Yes.
It's like, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm, I know it seems favorite. I bet it sounds cooler in Greek, which I cannot speak.
Which we can barely read English. So anyway.
Yeah, everything is about to get really phonetic. So everyone's going to have to listen to me sound out every word.
Here we go.
So this book was meant to complement the Gospel of John by revealing deeper spiritual truths. At its heart, the Secret Book of John is about the importance of knowing where we come from to achieve spiritual salvation. It kicks off with Jesus Christ appearing in a vision to John, who's pretty upset to spill the cosmic tea. It starts with God, the One, who's beyond any words we have to describe. And from this indescribable One, we get a lineup of divine beings that pop into existence, with the text dubbing heaven the fullness, or Pleroma in the ancient Greek. And first up out of all of these is Barbelo, which is seen as the Holy Spirit and the Divine Mother of Christ. Then you have Sophia, Greek for wisdom, who's impulsive enough to attempt to create life without getting any divine approval to bring evil into the picture. And while she meant well, she didn't know how to do it right, hence you get evil. She didn't mean to do it, just fucking happened. Her creation, Yaldabaoth, gets booted from heaven and ends up being the one to craft our material world, a place far from divine.
Sophia's, isn't this Lord of the Rings?
It
This is Lord of the Rings.
It sounds like, it also sounds like a very bastardized attempt of where, of what Satan was. Like the PR turned this into Satan. In Sophia's mistake and her subsequent remorse set the stage for the concept of repentance. So again, just really quick, you have an actual God not involved in this. God has a creation of divine beings. One of them wants to create her own creation, which she wasn't allowed to do, and accidentally creates evil. That evil, Yaldabaoth, comes to Earth. So he's the one who creates our existence, or the first evil. So Yaldabaoth, with his crew of rulers, also known as Archons, then crafts Adam to trap a spark of divinity on Earth. And heavenly emissaries attempt to enlighten humanity with Gnosis, which was the secret knowledge of our true heavenly nature and the key to our salvation. But Yaldabaoth is hellbent on keeping us in the dark, leading to an ongoing struggle between spiritual awakening and material entrapment. Then there's the reality of the rulers, which dives deeper into the saga of the Archons. The world and humanity are not the creations of an omnipotent and benevolent God, but the lesser ignorant beings known as Archons, and the chief among them, again, is Yaldabaoth, sometimes identified as the God of the Old Testament. This entity is portrayed as arrogant and ignorant of the existence of a higher transcendent realm beyond his own. And according to the text, Yaldabaoth and his fellow Archons create the physical world and humans, but their creation is definitely flawed and incomplete. The true divine spark or spirit within humanity actually comes from a higher source, which was beyond the Archon's realm. And this divine element is actually what grants humans the potential for spiritual knowledge and the possibility of returning to the divine realm, transcending the material world being created by the Archons. I can just see you fucking Googling out of the corner of my eye.
I'm losing my fucking mind.
You think
mind.
This is just Sauron?
This is, orcs.
They created orcs, 9 rings.
Were, no.
Gave elves, them to the men.
No, you don't understand. Elves were trying to create life through Morgoth, obviously the first Dark Lord, but they fucked up, and that's how they created orcs. It was a failure in a transformation process because they didn't have like the full power and understanding. They tried to create life without. God, this is the same shit. This is the same shit.
You want to know what's crazy?
Lord of the Rings.
Tolkien, the very middle of Tolkien writing Lord of the Rings between 1937 and 1949. Was right when these Gnostic texts were discovered, 1945. You could be onto something.
I literally know that I am. So anyway.
yeah. I literally know that I am onto something.
Anyway. I literally was like, fucking burned a hole in my brain. And I was like, why am I having like crazy deja vu right now? And I was like, oh, because you're just, these are the elves. These are the elves trying to create life without full understanding, and evil comes in and creates fucking orcs from Morgoth. So anyway,
just a bunch of Frankenstein running around.
Anyway, but they were still a divine being. The elves are still a divine being. They're like the second in command in divinity, which is the same with these bitches.
Yeah.
That's crazy, dude. Anyway.
So, you know what? Lord of the Rings, I'm going to say right here, right now. Also a Gnostic text.
I think so, dog.
Prove me wrong.
Crazy.
Prove me wrong.
That is crazy. Okay. Anyway, so, I'm back. I just had my brain melted out of my fucking ear there for a second.
This narrative also reinterprets biblical stories, such as the creation of Adam and Eve, presenting Eve and the serpent as positive figures who help awaken humanity to its true spiritual nature and potential. The text criticizes the rulers' attempts to keep humanity in ignorance and subjugation, and emphasizes this knowledge is the key to salvation and liberation from the material world and its rulers. Then we get to the next Gnostic text, which is the Revelation of Peter. This dives further into the afterlife and challenges the legitimacy of the established church. It suggests that the true spiritual authority and salvation come from direct personal knowledge of the divine rather than the adherence to external rituals and dogmas. The next Gnostic text is the Gospel of Philip, which is famous for going into the relationship of unity between man and Jesus, even more notably Jesus' relationship with Mary Magdalene. The Gospel of Truth once again highlights the needs for gnosis and how human suffering comes from ignorance. I suffer from being stupid every day, babe. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the most interesting to me, the Gospel of Mary, which provides a narrative for Mary Magdalene herself.
Pause for clarification for me, because I always get them mixed up. Mary Magdalene. This is
sex worker.
The quote unquote sex worker. She was for sure at the Last Supper painting.
I blew your mind with that conspiracy.
It's real. It's real.
But Mary.
She was there.
Mary.
Mary Magdalene.
Magdalene.
Yes. Was a disciple.
But Mary was also worker. The name of Jesus's mom.
The virgin in heavy.
Virgin books. Mary. And then Mary Magdalene.
Okay, I've got it.
You got it. In this text, although incomplete, we learn about the tumultuous relationship between Mary Magdalene and the other disciples, specifically Peter. And this shows that in early Christian history, Mary actually had a role of authority and was a key member of Jesus's inner circle.
Some would say she had so much of a role of authority that she was at the Last Supper.
At the right hand of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And it is this revelation, along with the fact that she was depicted as being a wise person and a close confidant for Christ, that we see the conspiracy theories around Gnosticism and Mary Magdalene begin to suggest a deliberate effort by early Orthodox Christian churches to suppress certain truths that could undermine its burgeoning authority and doctrinal purity. I know this is going to be a stretch for you, bitch, but I need you to, for a moment, imagine that the foundations of the Christian church as we know it are not built upon solid rock, but rather are perched precariously atop a hidden labyrinth of truths and a secret so profound and threatening that it could destabilize the very pillars of Orthodox belief.
What, that women have rights and thoughts and opinions and autonomy?
That's the actual tea.
Yeah, I bet, dude.
Because... consider for a moment that if we take the implications of Gnostic teachings, where the material world, with all its suffering and imperfection, is not the creation of an all-loving God, but the product of a flawed, ignorant deity.
Yes.
This deity, Yaldabaoth, blinded by his own arrogance, crafts a world designed to keep humanity ensnared in ignorance, far from the transcendent truth of their divine origins. Now juxtapose this with the world we live in today. A world fraught with conflict, suffering, and existential dread. Could the Gnostics have been onto something? Could our cosmic reality be a playing field of cosmic entities with agendas far beyond our own understanding? And if so, what does that mean for the fate of humanity? So let's entertain for a moment the possibility that Gnostic texts are not mere religious artifacts, but rather coded warnings, a map for those who dare to seek the truth beyond the veil of physical reality. This map would lead us through a maze of spiritual enlightenment, past the illusions caused by Yaldabaoth and his archons, toward a reunion with the divine spark within us all. Imagine, just to jump off of the ledge here for a little bit, what would have happened to our society had we been raised up with the thought that our existence is bullshit and that we need to not only try to get out of it, but also take the teachings of women like Mary Magdalene along with it, that not that we are under the boot of men, but together in pure equality and wisdom, we get out of it.
It's like when you ask ChatGPT, show me a future without men and show me a future without women. And one of them is a post-apocalyptic war zone. And then the other is like buildings made out of lush greenery and and beauty. And you can obviously assume which is which.
Exactly. Because you asked earlier, like, why the fuck would any of this be suppressed? Or like, why wouldn't it be added in? Like, why do we pick and choose? And it's because, although speculative, but we all know what the real fucking answer is at the end of the day. It all lies in power dynamics of spiritual authority. Knowledge is power, and the promise of direct, personal communion with the divine is threat to a hierarchical religious institution. Because if you and I have the power to find salvation within ourselves, what
they
role
can't
is
take
there?
Our money.
Yeah. There's no need for the church. There's no need for clergy. There's no need for institutions to claim to mediate our relationship with the divine. Mm-hmm. And this is where we get the big conspiracy, which is a deliberate centuries-long campaign to demonize and suppress Gnosticism and to bury the teachings of Yaldabaoth and the true nature of our world beneath the foundation of orthodoxy. And it's not just about spiritual control. It's about keeping humanity chained to a cycle of spiritual ignorance where all the truth remains hidden in plain sight within ancient texts, and it's all just awaiting rediscovery.
Well, it's not only the suppressing knowledge. It's also that if you say you don't have the power to speak to God, I do, me specifically, and the lineage I come from, it's like that's another form of suppressing information and keeping people ignorant and keeping them dependent and keeping them lining your pockets. And obviously you're not just doing that because you want to be the number one guy. You're also doing that because you can now say and make the rules because you are now the quote unquote, like, voice of God.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's why certain texts that talk about women being equal and on the right hand side of God were also suppressed, because they don't want us to be equal. They want us to be under them. Like, we need to be in missionary position, but we can't be missionaries.
Yeah.
It's just baby makers, babe.
Also, literally and metaphorically in missionary position.
Exactly. Like, the fact that Mary Magdalene was an equal and was on the inner circle of Christ and wasn't just the woman who washed his feet with her hair. Like, literally was
he washed her feet.
That used to be a thing. Women used to wash feet with their hair, and there was a fucking
what the fuck?
It's not even a crazy thing, because they aired an actual Super Bowl commercial in the year of our Lord 2021 showing women washing people's feet with their hair.
They were using hair in the Super Bowl commercial?
There was literally a Super Bowl commercial showing.
I know. I saw the Jesus. Showing. I saw the God Super Bowl.
That's like
commercial.
A thing. Yeah, that's like
but
a thing.
But they were
the
using
Bible.
Their hair?
Yeah.
Are you? What the fuck? Also, that commercial was AI generated. I think it was. Washing feet with hair. The fuck?
Yeah.
The fuck? The fuck is that about? Okay, anyway. Sorry. That really took me off.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, she used him as like a towel to wipe his feet.
Oh my God. It's like hair is not even like absorbent like that. That's just like weird. It's not even a good process.
Yeah, it was just a way to shit on Mary again, because that was a humiliating thing to let your hair down like that in society. But that was all she had.
Fucking weirdos. Okay. Anyway.
So, as we peer into the potential doomsday scenario that emerges from this conspiracy, it's not necessarily one of fire and brimstone, but one of an actual awakening, which would be a cataclysmic shift in the consciousness of humanity as we come to realize the prison of the material world and the potential for liberation. It's not necessarily the ending of the world, but it's the end of a world. A shedding of a cosmic ignorance as we collectively awaken to our true nature and destiny, and in a sense, askew the fucking church.
Yeah.
So I'll say this. For Mochi, and indeed for all of us, this tale isn't just a dive into historical curiosity. It's in fact a beacon to call, a call to action to challenge the narratives that we've been fed and to seek the gnosis that liberates. Because in this light, the Gnostic texts are not relics of a forgotten faith, but are actually guideposts for a journey that could redefine the very essence of human existence. So, as we conclude this exploration, let's not see it as an end, but as the beginning of a personal and collective quest for truth. The story of Yaldabaoth and the Gnostics challenges us to question, seek, and perhaps most importantly, Noel, to remember that within each of us lies a spark of the divine. The path ahead is fraught with mystery and revelation, but for those brave enough to walk it, the rewards are nothing less than the liberation of the soul. By saying fuck you to organized religion.
Hey, girly, you know I've been doing it this whole time. You know, I will say, People always like to say, like, what would we do without religion? Like, what would we be? Like, what would humanity be?
Exactly what it can be now. Just no church.
Like, literally exactly what it is. Like, exactly what it is and what it's always been.
Yeah, just no church.
And it also makes me think and wonder, like, who are you then? You know what I mean? Like, who are you? Like, what are you doing and thinking in your life and to yourself that is so concerning that if everyone else did it, you would be like, the world would go to shit in hell? Like,
yeah,
that always is the real question when people talk about, like, if we didn't have organized religion and we didn't have the churches, the world would be on fire and misery and agony and pain and suffering. And I also say, well, what is it now then, if not that?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But I also say, what are you doing that makes you worried in such a way that people need a carrot dangled in front of them to be good people and do good things? That just isn't innate human nature to be empathetic and kind.
Yeah, I would even challenge it as, like, a religious person myself of, like, why can't you have a religious relationship with your beliefs? Why does it have to be guided through fucking church? Aren't you the same people who complain, like, when you get told you have to wear a seatbelt and yet you need the seatbelt of church to keep you locked into your fucking car of belief?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Like, I don't get it. Like, you can have a personal relationship with whatever deity you believe in or not. Why do you have to go to an organization that pumps this evil out into the fucking world and tells you to give them money so they become these monoliths of just cash flow and create billionaires? Meanwhile, what, you're fucking struggling to get your hand to mouth and you're telling me, you're telling you, Noelle, that you're doing it wrong?
Yeah.
I keep my money to feed myself and I donate it where needed. I'm not going to give it to a church. That's
the tea right there, girl. That's the tea right there.
Wild. But anyway, I think this gnosis bit is a little bit silly with the whole yada bayeth and stuff. But I think it, at the core of it, just saying, like, dude, just have a relationship with your savior or your Christ or whatever you think that is, and you'll be fine. I think that makes tons of sense. And I relate to that as someone who feels religious but doesn't go to church.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And then I can also appreciate saying you don't need to be bribed with a higher being, a higher power, or a heaven to be a good person. You could just be a good person.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, this existence kind of fucking sucks right now. Mm-hmm. And we're okay to say that, but, like, collectively, we should definitely not try to make it worse.
Exactly.
And the only way you don't make it worse is by being a good person.
Yes. And you shouldn't be a good person just because you think you're going to get something out of it.
Yeah. And then you're not a good person.
Exactly. So it's all redundancy in the end. It's like,
yeah,
it's so weird. I don't know. It's the more we sit with religion, the more I'm like, what's going on actually? Like, yeah. And I know that in other parts of the world, we obviously have a very specific brand of Christianity in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, I don't think, and I mean, it's probably the other side of the same coin, because I assume that if you live in a, like, you know, Vatican-esque Catholic city, country, Providence, whatever, overseas, that, like, you're dealing with extremes in a different way. Where, like, we're dealing with extremes, let's just say, like, Southern Baptists or evangelicals who are, like, speaking in tongues and, you know, like, fainting and being possessed by the Holy Ghost. Like, you're probably, and then you have a preacher wearing a fucking Louis Vuitton three-piece suit.
Yeah.
Being like, you know, put money in the basket. And then that's, like, our version. And it, you know, the people of the parish are struggling, but then he's got a private jet and a Cadillac. And you see the corruption and you see the hypocrisy and it feels extreme and it feels very fucking American. It feels so fucking American. It feels just as American as an eagle or the red, white, and blue or a fucking AR-15. And then I want to say, like, that's so specific. That's such a unique experience, but it's, like, totally probably not. Like, they're just dealing with the same shit in different font. Like, if you are in a Providence overseas that is, like, deeply, profoundly Catholic, but in the sense of, like, the rigidness of Catholicism, borderline Vatican-esque, you're dealing with that same shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's where we get exorcisms of the third worlds and shit like that. And it's just like using religion as this like bait and switch. It's just so fucking, obviously we have a very American version of it and it's very capitalistic. But at the end of the day, it's all predatory and it's weird. It's so fucking weird. It's so weird. It freaks me out. I feel like, I don't know. I wish for a moment you could just like tap someone out of it and be like, you don't, and I'll even put myself in the shoes of someone who believes, just tap them out of it and be like, you don't have to be like this to have a relationship with God or your spirituality.
Exactly.
Like, you don't have to like do this. You can just like have it within yourself. Like, why do you think you have to go through someone else? Why do you think you have to go through a middleman? If there's anything we know about business strategy, is that the middleman is ripping you off.
Exactly. And if you want to learn, go to someone who will teach you. You should be going a place that teaches you how to know about your beliefs in a way where you're not a fucking ignorant piece of shit bastard bigot. Like people thumping their Bible and saying like, oh, you can't be gay and Christian. Like those are the ones who need to go to be educated. Like you have no relationship with anybody. You just fucking suck.
But that's the problem, is that even when at this point, when they like dig back, you're just finding more of the like corrupt orthodoxy. It's just like,
exactly.
It's insane. I don't know. It's really interesting. We were actually reached out by a mutual friend of the podcast who looked at our April Fool's joke, which, April fucking Fools.
Yeah, we're April not going, Fools. We're not changing it to Chelsea and Noel go to church. Nobody called us on that. They were just all really fucking supportive.
They were my God,
They're like, cute logo, babes.
They were like, love what you guys are doing. Crazies. April Fools, you freaks, you freak asses. Mutual friend of the podcast, Brady, said the only person I assume who got the April Fool's joke, because he said, okay, like acknowledging that we're not being serious. He says, okay, but a series where you two attend various religious groups meetings and give reviews is a podcast I totally listen to.
Which,
and
I would be so fucking down.
I would be into it. I would be into it.
I will say my favorite friend of the podcast, Keelan, did reach out.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she was only voting for the bottom image because we looked like lesbians. So, love that.
Also,
and someone else said, I love the color palette, but the design on top is A1.
Yeah, friend of the podcast, Seth. Are you guys being for real? Are we like getting pranked by our prank? Is everyone going along with it as a joke? It feels very sincere.
It's why is everyone being so blindly supportive? What the fuck?
I am concerned. I thought we've done enough content for people to know where we're not going to church.
Also, that's the Chelsea opposite. And Noel go to church. That was even a clever.
Yeah, Chelsea and Noel go to heaven, maybe.
Yeah, I wanted to. I was like, go to church, whatever. I was thinking about go to heaven.
It just makes me think of like Ice Cube being like, if you were scared, motherfucker, go to church.
Yeah. So I was like, we're going to church, but no, I get
it.
It is what it is.
Yeah, that is.
Well, thanks for being so blindly supportive of us, nerds. Appreciate it, actually.
Unless this is an elaborate ruse and you guys are pranking us as we prank you.
We got double pranked. But yeah, no, definitely not changing her name. Also, I would never presume that any creation would surpass what Kelly has done with our logo and all.
Yeah, honestly, that's actually the big insult, is that you all looked at that and were like, oh yeah, that fucking AI generated logo is clearly Kelly's work. Come on, she makes actual art.
Yeah, I do not live in a world where I would ever turn away from Kelly's services.
Yeah, we have
need for actual
logo. We don't even have fingers in these fucking AI art. Okay. There's no fingers. It's a fucking seal paw holding onto another seal paw. And you guys were like, yep, that's it.
Beautiful.
That's it. Perfect. Love. So anyway, you guys are crazy for that. Oh, I just want to hope that we're getting bamboozled.
I'd like
Because otherwise, like so. Disappointed. Man, my mom texted me about it.
Yeah, she Noah's said, mom was very concerned that Noah was going to be religious all of a sudden.
She sent it to me and goes, "Bottom." I said, "It's a joke. It's April Fool's." She goes, "Oh, I keep forgetting it's April 1st. I was going to put my head in the toilet and flush it several times." Because she thought we were getting religious for a second.
I know this was the cutest little April Fool's joke, too. And now we got...
Now it's making me have thoughts about myself because people think that it was for real. Maybe they thought like friend of the podcast Brady did, where they were like, "Oh, you guys are doing a new series where you are investigating religion boots on the ground."
We should, though. That would be fun.
We should. We should. You know, that could be a good starting point to the inevitability, which is us going to the new local cult that won the workout cult. Remember okay. Michelle knew about it?
Oh, I bet. Let's go to Scientology too, because I bet we could clip my little microphones in and hide them somehow, or get hidden microphones that look like a pin.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to like wear a wig and a disguise because they got me last time I tried to sign up. But I think we should start with your everyday religions. Or mm-hmm. No,
that's boring.
We just gotta go controversial, yeah. So we'll go to the Catholic service.
Yeah, Catholic service. It doesn't even have to be like fringe stuff. It's just stuff like there's like a Thai temple right near me that I've never been into. But I dare say that the Utah demographic is pretty ignorant to Taoism.
Yeah. And do we also like, let's say, let's just throwing it out there. I don't know. This is tough. Let's say we want to like meet with some Mormons, right? Yeah. Do we come saying like, "Hey, you know that like linguistic anthropologists have looked at the text of the Book of Mormon and can without a doubt say that this language was not used in the time frames and dates that it's claiming it was."
Yeah. I don't think they would like that.
Do you not? Yeah. What do you think they would just say? Oh my
God. I can't believe I didn't fucking mention this. My home was infiltrated by Jehovah's Witnesses. And when? I say this, dude, on last week when I was at my 5-hour oil change appointment, I came home and they had wiggled, you know, like Bible pages are super thin. Uh-huh. They had wiggled a Bible thinness pamphlet about Jehovah's Witnesses all the way through my front door, my locked front door into my home. They didn't just put a pamphlet like taped to the door or on the doorknob. They credit card slid it through, but it seriously had like the strength of crepe paper. So they must have just fucking sat there.
Crepe paper.
I bet my dogs were losing their goddamn minds.
Oh my God.
But I came home and I was like, "What the fuck?" I like opened my front door and I was like, "What the fuck is this?" And I picked it up and it didn't look like Jehovah's Witnesses, but I figured it out because it was like find out more at jv.org. And I'm like, that has to be Jehovah's Witness.
The last time we got a Jehovah's Witness at the door was when we were living in like Sacramento area. And my mom was cleaning the secondary living room that was just for show that no one could sit in. And she looked out the like bay window and there was Jehovah's Witness walking up and she dropped to the ground as if there was shots about to rain through the windows.
Just like,
and she said, "Get the fuck down and shut the fuck up." And I was like, "What?" And then I heard them knocking and she just stared at me on the ground and was like shaking her head like, "Don't fucking say anything." And after they left, I investigated the front door. They left a pamphlet. And it was very brimstone and hellfire. Was your pamphlet like that? I don't know if we were getting like California Jehovah's Witnesses. So they were like very forward. But it was literally like, "You're going to go to hell if you don't fuck with us." And then you like open it. And it was like literally pictures of like damnation.
I'm going to be honest. I did not open the pamphlet.
Oh, come on.
I went, the fuck? I flipped it over, saw jw.org. And then I was like, "Jehovah's Witnesses." And then I threw it away immediately.
You're supposed to be an investigative journalist.
I wasn't thinking. I am on their website right now. And one of them is the shell of the diabolical ironclad beetle. Was it designed? It was an article on their front page.
I'll try to find the image that I saw in the pamphlet because it was very alarming.
Why is this?
Are you on the right site?
The Jehovah's Witnesses. Yeah, it's jw.org/Bible teachings.
I'll send it to you.
Okay.
It's on the Jehovah's Witnesses
website. Can't wait to look. Speaking of things but you can send to people. We should go to the
Jehovah's Witness church service. While
I don't know if they just let you in.
Why not?
I don't know.
They came into my house with their paper.
Yeah.
I should go into their house with my microphone.
I think that's my ultimate question is, do we want to come in as a casual observer or do we want to come in with questions?
I think casual observer with questions ready. Cause if people are like, is this your first time here? And we say yes. And we should also come up with lies we can tell in their whole establishment.
I was thinking of like with questions as in like, hey, what's going on with this part of your religion? But I understand.
We could also ask actual questions if they're like, why are you here? You can just say we're curious.
Yeah.
That we're writing and in, we're just researching for personal purposes.
Yeah. I wonder if it would be like the safer, smarter option would be to like go as an observer and then get our questions ready, crosshair style, and then have a secondary conversation. Where it's like, hey, look, doing our own research after being here, we have a few questions about this, that, and this.
I also think we should come up with aliases.
Okay. Well, don't say it right now.
I'm going to be Deborah Patterson.
Deborah Patterson? Well, why don't just be Mike Kuntz?
Deborah Patterson is a good alias.
Yeah, totally believable.
And people say Deborah, I go, it's Deborah. With a straight face.
Yeah. I would buy it. I would believe it.
You could be Gina Abernathy.
Gina Abernathy? Oh my God. These are vile names.
Gina Abernathy and Deborah Patterson.
We're not 70 fucking five.
Those are good names.
No. If you want to be strategic, we need to look up like the 10 most popular names between like the 80s and 90s. So like
Ashley and
Jessica and Ashley. Rachel, Brittany, Jessica, Ashley, Sarah.
Yeah.
We could do a two name. Abby Lynn.
And Sarah Ann Young. Yeah. And Abby Lynn Smith.
Yeah. Brittany Jean Spears.
Amanda Bynes.
Oh, Amanda's another one. Very Amanda's 90s name.
Yeah.
I love, we can't be Gina. That's
just saying.
No, literally, these are them: Sarah, Elizabeth, Amber, Jennifer, Brittany, Jessica, Lauren, Samantha, Stephanie, Amanda, Megan, Alexis, Ashley, Kayla, Nicole, Rachel, Emily, Taylor, Hannah, Abigail, Victoria, Courtney, Maria, and Alyssa.
I want to be Courtney. Courtney Act.
We come in with drag names.
Yeah, I'm Bianca Del Rio.
Yeah, you can be Courtney Act, and I'll be a mandatory meeting.
Yes. Love it. Oh. Anyway, you were about to close out the episode.
Yeah, I was going to say,
open my big ass mouth.
Speaking of mandatory meetings and things you can send, we have a link tree and all of our bios. We are at Go to Hell Podcast. I am at Noelle Fain. That is at Sith Lard. In that link tree, you can find a link to our Patreon. $1 gets you in. We have new episodes every week. Fun, heavy, and lighthearted, mostly heavy episode. This week, we also have, or at least we should, I think I did update it, our YouTube.
Mm.
Our YouTube page. You can now listen to us on YouTube. Shout out. So please go like, subscribe, follow, comment. No, honestly, we just need you to subscribe. You can honestly go to YouTube and it's Chelsea and Noelle Go to Hell, because there is another Go to Hell podcast on YouTube with one subscriber.
We'll bury him.
Yeah, we got to bury those motherfuckers. But you have to now search Chelsea and Noelle Go to Hell, which is very annoying. But it'll pop up and go subscribe. That's it. Just go subscribe to it. You don't even have to do anything else. You never have to look at it ever again. Just go subscribe to it. Because we need like 1,000 subscribers or something, and then we can start monetizing it, which means we can do more cool things like donate or maybe buy another ghost hunting machine. We never know. So there's that. There is also a link to our merch, which 100% of the proceeds are donated. We also have a link to Kelly Holloran or at Wildwood Owl on Etsy. She makes cool shit for us and she makes cool shit in general. So go check her out. We also have a link to our Discord server where you can be like Mochi's dad and DM us ideas that we will eventually get to because Chelsea's bad at following up. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a link to listen to us, which is anywhere podcasts are heard. Nice. So that's all I got to say about that. In the spirit of not being cringe, but in the spirit of having fun, I will give a hail to Touch Tunes and stealing someone's phone to buy Touch Tune credits on, because it's very expensive, especially if you have to skip someone else's song. That's like 5 credits. So
wow. Well, I'm going to say hail Deborah and hail Gina, mm-hmm. wherever you may be.
The names we will never use.
You may be closer than we will ever know.
Also, yeah, if you have an idea of like any religious services or ceremonies you think we should go to, let us know, because I guess that's what we're going to do next.
Hell yeah.
So, scary.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Let's get the fuck out of here. Bye.